This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The fastest growing population in Michigan prisons? Aging inmates. And that's presenting a critical challenge: how to provide end-of-life care to those inmates. That's where a prison hospice program called CHOICES comes into play. It stands for Choose Health Options, Initiate Care, and Educate Self. With us now, our chaplain, Adrian Derschel. He's a prison chaplain for the Michigan Department of Corrections. And Karen Duckworth is here. She's manager of the CHOICES program at Corizon Health. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you.
So here we have CHOICES providing compassionate end-of-life care and spiritual support for inmates. How does this program work?
It starts at the facility with each patient. Every MDOC facility does have a certain amount of inmates, and I help to identify those that are reaching near end of life, declining. I identify who they might be, and we set about enrolling them into the CHOICES program for palliative and hospice care.
So much the same way, whether you're in prison or out, it's doctors, everybody decides that this is the final phase, and then you shift into a new gear, as it will.
Exactly. We have an interdisciplinary team at each facility that helps identify, and we work together in collaboration to find those patients and welcome them into our program if they choose. It is voluntary.
It's voluntary. How many prisoners do you have right now? How many patients do you have?
Right now I have 106 active patients throughout the state of Michigan. So we have about 40% of those 104 patients are at Duane Waters Health Center and C Unit in Jackson, and the rest are in outlying facilities across the state.
Adrian, even people who are not dealing with being incarcerated find it very, very difficult to talk about dying, patients and families. What do you see happening with inmates once they realize that the time has come and they are approaching the end of their life?
Well, they go through the same type of dying process that everybody else would go through, the denial stage, and so forth, grieving.
But what's the difference? Is there a difference? Is there a different layer of that because of the fact that you're behind bars?
You know, they feel alone. That's kind of one of the biggest aspects, is they don't have the social support. They don't have their family is there. You know, where someone gets in the world, you get diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, you know, you run to your support mechanism. If these guys are incarcerated, that support mechanism's not there. They could talk to their family. They can get visits, you know, so many times a week and so on and so forth, but they don't have that network of care. It's very different.
And we know so often patients want to go home and be at home. We see that so often. I don't want to have to die in a hospital or in a facility. They can't do it.
That is our goal, though, still.
To let them go home?
So when these guys get diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, the medical staff, the social work staff, the IDT team, they put together a plan for putting in for a medical parole for the individual and for commutations for someone so that they have that ability to die at home. Now, that's not guaranteeing that anybody's going to get either one of those, but that is part of the process of what we do is to try to help them to be able to die at home.
Can you give us an idea how often that happens?
It actually happens quite often. There's a lot of red tape kind of in making that happen. Obviously, they have different ADLs.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Activities of daily living.
Mm. Thank you.
And I would say about 10% of our patients who have ever been in CHOICES have actually been paroled home.
So, all right. So most are still going to have to deal with dying in a prison.
Yes. And at some point, those patients, they do believe they are at home. If they have been in prison for a very, very long time, this is their home. We try to keep them there for their well-being and their support.
What rights do prisoners have, Karen, when it comes to this kind of health care service? I know there's something called a patient's end-of-life bill of rights.
Yes, we support them indicating what they would like to have done at end of life, such as, do they want to be resuscitated? Would they like to be a full code where they are fully resuscitated? We work to educate those patients on those decisions, their choices, and help to make that happen for them. And advanced directives, we do work with that so they can appoint a family member to act on their behalf if they could no longer make those decisions.
This is a population that has not had the opportunity to make many choices and call the shots in their time, right?
And ultimately, that is the most important thing for these people, is that end of life, they do feel they have a choice, a decision. They don't get to make many.
Yeah. How much access do they get to their families? Is there special visiting for patients at end of life who might be able to have family members come more often?
There is, actually. That's up to the warden's discretion. Certain wardens, both the two wardens that I've worked with in the past, Heidi Washington and Jeremy Bush, both have been very, very open to allowing what we call bedside visitation.
Tell us more, Adrian, about dignity therapy, and especially these biographies that are created.
So one thing, that when we were developing the On Eagle's Wings program, one of the goals was to be able to give these guys an opportunity to tell their story, however that be. So I looked into different kind of generativity models, found a biographer by the grace of God. Gif Chalchevek ended up a student here at University of Michigan, and she'd been trained in narrative therapy. And so we put together an idea and went with the dignity therapy because it probably had the most documentation, clinical research on it, and it's been wonderful.
What happens?
So basically what we do is we prepare the patients. It's all voluntary. They have to sign consents that they want this done. We give them the questions ahead of time. We digitally record the interview, which it's always right around an hour. Our medical transcription actually then does transcribes it medically, professionally, and we put that into a biographical format. They have an opportunity to make corrections, deletions, and so on and so forth, and then we present them the final biography. And then it goes to whoever they deem is their family, whether that be someone in the world or even somebody else. Yeah, so
maybe somebody close to
maybe someone
close.
That they've done 40 years in prison with. That's exactly.
So they are able to walk the reader through their lives. Here's who I am.
They each get to say their own message, whatever they want that to be. Whether they want to tell their family of their past errors and ask for forgiveness. That's a really big part of the On Eagle's Wings program, is getting them handled with the forgiveness and being able to say goodbye and knowing that they're whole in heart. So it's their story, and they can kind of direct that however they want. Now, we have standard questions that we use, mm-hmm. the regular dignity therapy questions, but, you know, it's their story, and they can say what they want to say and let their voices be heard, and that's huge.
You know, Adrian, as you talk about all of this, I know you were an officer for many years. Now you're a chaplain. You've seen every aspect of incarcerated life. I have to imagine that this kind of program, Choices and On Eagle's Wings, this upends everybody's conceptions of everyone else, or it can. Prisoners to guards, guards to prisoners.
It definitely has changed the whole mindset when you are used to being in a situation where, you know, it's corrections. It's, you know, we make sure they're secure. Mm-hmm. We make sure this. And now we're talking about compassionate care and caring for the prisoners and allowing their voices to be heard. So it's kind of a total change from what I had been. But on the flip side, it really is a byproduct of my 20-year career too. So, you know, it's seeing that this was something that we should be doing this, and this is the type of care that we need to be providing these prisoners.
And they gives, I've got to imagine it gives, as you're working with prisoners and others are watching this going on and seeing this happen, you're going to have prisoners, the idea to have them as volunteers, that's opening up some new ideas and new frontiers for them.
It is doing that for the patients, for sure, mm-hmm. but I see it also with the healthcare providers at the site. So we're changing how that is viewed, too. And I was a nurse at Duane Waters Health Center from 2008 to 2012, and that was before this program really got launched well. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of inmates that did die alone, and it was sad. It was very sad for me to watch, and so that's why I became hospice certified. And this program just opened up at the right time that we could work on this together.
What is your ultimate hope for these prisoners who are at the end of their lives? We have many people that you've got a big prison population, and no one's getting any younger, so you know that you're going to have a lot of this ahead. What's your hope for these people?
I would like them to have that conclusion of their life. We all enter this world and leave this world the same way. And I think it's just as important that a death can be that whole body experience and that we can make it comfortable and have all their emotional, their spiritual needs met and that they can die peacefully.
What about you, Adrian?
I saw a study once that said they asked people that had critical illnesses and were terminally ill and dying what was the most important. And the number one A and number one B, number one A was pain, and number one B was being right with God. And so I try, from my standpoint, to try to help facilitate that spiritually, whatever their faith-based being. And I would say my second main point is that for no prisoner to die alone, because I think that part of the dignity of life is for that. Nobody should have to die alone.
Well, it's a very remarkable program called CHOICES, standing for Choose Health Options, Initiate Care, and Educate Self, this prison hospice program. And we've been talking to the manager of this program, Karen Duckworth, and Chaplain Adrian Derschel, who's a prison chaplain for the Michigan Department of Corrections. Thank you so much to both of you for sharing your work with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.